Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Christopher Jones Cruz, Bruce Alpert, and Anne Ball. Later, Steve Ember and Shirley Griffith will tell us about American writer Kurt Vonnegut. But first, here is Christopher Jones Cruz.
The third and last U.S. presidential debate takes place Wednesday. The earlier debates were marked by political nastiness that many historians say is at its worst level in years. Some teachers, however, are working to make debates less angry. They are teaching their students about civil discourse. VOA recently visited an 8th-grade civics class at Bluestone Middle School in Skipwith, a small town in southern Virginia near the border with North Carolina. In the class, students are learning to disagree without being disagreeable.
So this might be a little bit of a heavy discussion this morning.
Stephanie Lechte's class is going to debate a divisive issue, the result of mass shootings at schools.
Whether or not you honestly think that teachers should be armed.
The issue divides politicians, friends, families, and neighbors. Rather than talk about it calmly and with an open mind, Americans often decide issues based on their political beliefs. They might agree with the opinions of a political leader before examining the issue thoroughly. Education experts say solving the problem could start in school civics classes. Paula McAvoy is the program director of the Center for Ethics and Education at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. In 2015, she and Diana Hess published a book called The Political Classroom. Their goal was to help teachers give students tools to debate the difficult issues they will face as adults. She spoke to VOA on Skype.
With the help of the teacher, they can learn that disagreement is normal, that we can still be friends even if we disagree with each other politically.
McAvoy believes American society is polarized even beyond politics. She says many Americans have gathered into communities where almost everyone holds the same opinion about issues. She says this means we are less likely to even encounter people who disagree with us. And then when we do, often our instinct at the dinner party with your friends is to just avoid talking about politics if we know we're going to disagree with each other. She says that is bad for democracy. But she believes solving the problem could start in civics class. Many teachers worry that if they discuss politics in class, students will soon begin to shout at each other. But McAvoy says teachers can and should control the classroom with a respectful but firm tone. Lechte agrees with McAvoy. She believes this is the most important class the students have. We talk about the real world here. she chooses a difficult subject and gives her students news reports and other information about it from both sides. She then splits the class into groups.
1, 2, 4. 1, 2, 3, against.
Then they debate.
Use this research to back it up. Be knowledgeable. Have a why.
They can't call the police department. That guy is like, boop, I'll be there. That's not going to happen. Can they deal with it if they do kill somebody? Can they deal with it mentally?
Each side is given the same amount of time to make its points. Before the students on the other side can answer, they must first tell what they heard. Lechte says disagreement is acceptable. McAvoy says her research shows that when students discuss and they're reading and comparing a lot of material and hearing from each other, they actually end up learning more than they do from traditional teaching methods. But she does not believe better civics classes alone will save American politics. She says she is not idealistic enough to think that if people can just discuss with each other, then the entire political system is going to change. The adults in the system need to work on their behavior. She believes the classes will help students become better citizens. She says they learn that they should pay attention and that it's fun to talk about this with other people and hear what they have to say. After the debate, Lechte lets the students talk about their true feelings, not just the ones they were assigned to defend. Sometimes, the students argue. Lechte says that is important because there are two sides to every issue. Lechte says she hopes the students learn to listen and to be respectful. She says they need to remember that the person across from them is another human being with maybe some different thoughts and opinions. And just respecting that person is the most important thing they can do in that moment. She says she sees a lot of kids realize that they have to learn to listen to other people. She says they are the politicians and voters of the future. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Last year, an American research group asked people in 38 countries for their opinions about free speech. What the researchers discovered may surprise you. They found that people in the United States are the most accepting of free speech, even when the comments are critical of their own religious beliefs. The Pew Research Center completed the opinion survey. Its researchers said the findings are timely. They noted that some college officials are debating whether to set up safe spaces or trigger warnings so students can avoid discussions they might find troubling. A safe place is a place where students can feel at ease discussing concerns without being judged or criticized. A trigger warning is when a teacher warns that a class discussion or reading might be troubling to some students. There has been debate in recent weeks about athletes who refuse to stand for the U.S. national anthem to protest racial injustice. Some Americans say athletes should be free to express their concerns about racial injustice. But others say everyone should show respect for the country's national anthem. The Pew Research Center said its 2015 survey found that 71% of Americans said people can say what they want. 67% said that the media can report the news freely. Pew used its findings to create measures of free expression for all 38 nations it surveyed. It said the free expression index in the United States is 5.73. That was the highest among the 38 nations in the study. Pew said the second highest index was Poland at 5.66, followed by Spain, Mexico, Venezuela, and Canada. All these countries have a free expression index of 5.0 or higher, it said. The lowest free expression indexes were in Senegal at 2.06, Jordan 2.52, Pakistan 2.78, Burkina Faso 2.94, and Vietnam 2.96. In the United States, Pew found that 40% of millennials believe the government should protect minority groups against offensive statements. They said the government should take action to stop people from making statements that the minorities consider offensive. For the study, Pew defined millennials as people born after 1980. The percentages of people who say the government should stop offensive statements is lower for older Americans, the group said. In July, a Pew report found 59% of Americans agree that too many people are easily offended these days over the language that others use. It found a lower percentage, 39%, agree that people need to be more careful about the language they use to avoid offending people with different backgrounds. A group called the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education opposes moves to limit free speech on college campuses. Nico Perino speaks for the foundation. American citizens have a long tradition of meeting speech they find offensive with more speech, not censorship, he said. But Perino is troubled by efforts to limit free speech at some colleges. This is a concerning development, he said. Over the years, he noted, students have been among the strongest supporters of free speech. But there is support for safe spaces and trigger warnings to protect students from material or opinions they might find troubling. A University of Chicago student recently wrote an opinion piece for the New York Times newspaper. The student, Sophie Downs, expressed opposition to the university's decision to stop trigger warnings and safe spaces. A professor who provides a trigger warning can help students get ready emotionally to deal with difficult subjects, she wrote. Downs said the political debate in the United States lately has become pretty ugly, so it's not surprising that students are looking for places to have civil discussions. At some schools, supporters of trigger warnings say that a student who has been physically attacked might suffer emotional harm by a talk that includes violent language. This year, the University of Chicago wrote a letter to its new students, saying it will not cancel speakers who might express opinions that some students might find troubling. The letter said the university wants students to speak, write, listen, challenge, and learn without fear of censorship. I'm Bruce Alpert.
Connection. China launched two astronauts into space on Monday. Their launch marks the beginning of China's longest human spaceflight yet. A rocket sent a Shenzhou 11 spacecraft with astronauts Chen Deng and Jing Haipeng into space. The rocket was fired from the Jinchuan Satellite Launch Center in the Gobi Desert. Chen is 37 years old. This is his first time in space. But Jing has done this before. It is his third space flight. He will turn 50 years old while orbiting the Earth. Their trip is off to a good start. That is what Morris Jones told VOA. Jones is an independent space expert from Australia. After 2 days in Earth's orbit, the spacecraft was to link up with China's space laboratory. The lab was placed into orbit last month. They plan to perform scientific and spacecraft-related experiments and test systems for a future space station. Morris Jones says China plans to launch a special module around 2018. A module is part of a space vehicle that can work independently. He says that piece will be at the center of a new space station. The Chinese space station will be built mostly by machine. Jones said that China will send up a module of the space station and it will connect with another part already in space. This is different from the way the International Space Station was built, but it is similar to the way Russia built an early space station. There will be some jobs that require astronauts. For example, they will deploy some pieces of equipment like solar panels. There will also be robot arms on the module to help secure the connections. China hopes to have the space station completed by 2022. It is expected to operate for at least 10 years. China also plans to land a rover vehicle on Mars by 2020. Until now, China had completed a total of 5 manned space missions. And in 2003, it successfully landed a probe on the moon. I'm Ann Ball.
Our next story is about American writer Kurt Vonnegut. Vonnegut shook up people with his unusual writing style and subjects. He helped energize huge numbers of young Americans to protest the Vietnam War and to question the powers that be. Steve Ember and Shirley Griffith have our report.
It took Kurt Vonnegut about 25 years to write his most famous book, Slaughterhouse-Five. It was published in 1969. The book remains required reading in high school and college English classes across the country. It includes this description of the firebombing of Dresden, Germany, by Allied forces during World War II, as witnessed by a soldier named Billy Pilgrim.
There was a firestorm out there. Dresden was one big flame. The one flame ate everything organic, everything that would burn. It wasn't safe to come out of the shelter until noon the next day. When the Americans and their guards did come out, the sky was black with smoke. The sun was an angry little pinhead. Dresden was like the moon now, nothing but minerals. The stones were hot. Everybody else in the neighborhood was dead. So it goes.
Kurt Vonnegut, a prisoner of war like Pilgrim, witnessed the bombing of Dresden. The waste of human life and other treasures greatly angered him. His novels contain some of that anger. But Vonnegut always balanced his work with humor and the use of wildly unlikely events presented as normal. For example, in Slaughterhouse 5, Billy Pilgrim visits the make-believe planet Tralfamador. He and a beautiful movie star named Montana Wildhack fall in love there in a clear ball of a house. They are studied by the Tralfamadorians and find happiness. Kurt Vonnegut compared the science fiction in Slaughterhouse 5 to the clowns in the plays of 16th century English writer William Shakespeare. Vonnegut believed such literary devices give the reader a rest before the story gets serious again.
Kurt Vonnegut's own life was also filled with tragedy and laughter. He was born in 1922 in Indianapolis, Indiana. His father was a building designer. His mother was from an extremely wealthy family. She suffered from mental illness and unhappiness as a failed writer. Vonnegut said his mother would have periods of madness where she would emotionally abuse his father. Vonnegut said his father was the gentlest man on the planet. Edith Vonnegut killed herself on Mother's Day in 1944. In 1958, Kurt Vonnegut's sister and her husband died within 2 days of each other. Vonnegut and his wife at the time adopted the couple's 3 children.
Kurt Vonnegut was interested in writing from at least his teenage years. He worked on his high school's newspaper. Later, he studied at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York, and became an editor of that school's newspaper. Vonnegut studied biochemistry. He followed in the footsteps of his older brother, Bernard, who was a scientist. However, Kurt Vonnegut was not a very good student. He left Cornell in 1943 and joined the army during World War II. German forces captured him during the Battle of the Bulge in Western Europe. Vonnegut's experiences as a soldier and the bombing of Dresden were among the major influences in his life. He was a pacifist, someone who opposes war and violence for settling conflict. He once said, "You can teach people savagery. They may need savagery, but it's bad for the neighbors. I prefer to teach gentleness."
After World War II, Vonnegut married a childhood friend, Jane Cox. They moved to Chicago, Illinois in 1945. They had 3 children. Vonnegut studied anthropology at the University of Chicago. he also worked as a reporter. Kurt Vonnegut also began writing short stories. They were published in literary magazines. In 1952, he wrote his first novel. Player Piano was influenced by Vonnegut's work at the power company General Electric. Vonnegut said it was there that he got the idea of everything being controlled by computers. He told Playboy magazine in 1973 that it made perfect sense to have little clicking boxes, as he called them, make all the decisions for humans. But he said it was not good for human workers to be replaced by machines. Vonnegut said that he wrote science fiction because General Electric was science fiction to him. Player Piano describes a place called Ilium where the humans have surrendered to a computer. Writers of science fiction are often considered less serious than writers of other kinds of fiction. As a result, Vonnegut's work was published in paperback and ignored by critics for several years.
But people started listening more closely to Kurt Vonnegut's literary voice in the 1960s. There was great public anger and protest over American military action in Vietnam. Distrust for the United States government was growing. Young people, and minorities especially, were speaking up against America's leaders and cultural restrictions. Vonnegut's statements about America, its people, and its leaders mixed perfectly with that atmosphere. His novels became favorites of many people involved in the anti-establishment, politically progressive movement of that time. Cat's Cradle, published in 1963, is one example. It tells the story of a fictional scientist who helped invent the atomic bomb and something even more dangerous, a substance called Ice 9.
In 1964, Cat's Cradle won a Hugo Award for science fiction. Also that year, Kurt Vonnegut began teaching at the Writer's Workshop at the University of Iowa. He was a professor for many years and taught English at several universities and colleges. He wrote at least 15 more books, including nonfiction. One of those books was Breakfast of Champions, published in 1973. Vonnegut tells the story of a wealthy and crazy car salesman named Dwayne Hoover. Hoover reads science fiction books written by a man named Kilgore Trout. Hoover becomes more and more sure that the books are not fiction, but reality. Kurt Vonnegut published his last book in 2005. A Man Without a Country is a collection of his opinions of many subjects, including issues in modern American society. He died in 2007 after suffering brain injuries from a fall in his home. He was 84.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.